Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. Kim Wise Whitehead, and I am back, folks. It is great to be back here with you to have a conversation that matters. I want to take some time, and I want to thank Anthony McCarthy for holding down the chair for me last week while I was away at the conference, the National Association for the Study of African American Life and History, the ASALA conference. I've spoken about ASALA before on the air, and just as a reminder, ASALA was founded by Dr. Carter G. Woodson, African American man, second black man to get his PhD in the Department of History from Harvard University. Dr. Carter G. Woodson is also the founder of Negro History Week, which later became Black History Month, but he founded ASALA. I serve as a national secretary, so I was away at the meeting all last week. And thank you to Anthony McCarthy for holding it down. Folks, coming up this weekend, there is a conference talking about lynching and the ugly history of what it means to think about lynching here in Maryland. And I want you to come out and I want you to join me. In fact, I just gave you information about who was the second African-American man to get his PhD in history from Harvard University, Carter G. Woodson. But the first person who calls who can tell me the name of the first African-American man to get his PhD in the Department of History from Harvard University, I'll give you two tickets to come out on Saturday and join me. And let's talk about the history of lynching here in Maryland. Now, later on in this hour, I want you to think out loud with me. Folks, Baltimore City Schools pays almost $7 million for school police. Yes, you heard that correctly. In a city where the buildings are falling down, in a city where there's water and broken pipes, in a city where we don't have air and we don't have heat, in a city where we can't seem to get things properly staffed, we are able to spend almost $7 million on school police. Where teacher Jesse Schneiderman, he's from Frederick Douglass High School, he put together a graph and he wants to know what else could we spend that $7 million on other than spending it on Baltimore City school police. Later on in this hour, we're going to talk about that. Now, in the next hour, we got to talk about Brett Kavanaugh. We got to talk about white women, and we got to talk about the peddling of feminism cloaked in a mask of white supremacy. Now, let me tell you what I mean by that, because since this incident with Brett Kavanaugh, we have seen kind of this rise in activism from white women, and we understand that. We appreciate it. We saw it last year, 2 years ago when Trump was inaugurated. We also are pushing back a little bit on the wokeness that's taking place, what we call performative wokeness, right? Bette Midler put up a tweet, then she deleted the tweet, and then she apologized for the tweet. But the tweet was made in the wake of her disappointment about Saturday's Senate confirmation of accused sexual predator Brett Kavanaugh to the United States Supreme Court. In it, now listen to what Bette Midler wrote. Bette Midler, who's supposed to be woke and she's on our side and she lifts up women of color, she tweeted out, "Women are the N-word of the world." Yes, folks, women are the N-word of the world. To underscore her point, Bette Midler then wrote, and I'm quoting here, "Raped, beaten, enslaved, married off, worked like dumb animals, denied education and inheritance, enduring the pain and danger of childbirth and life in silence for thousands of years, women are the most disrespected people on earth." And let me tell you, black feminists like myself, we went ballistic. Because that particular quote, which Alice Walker, bell hooks, and many of our black sheroes have talked about, black women are the N-word of the world. For her to take this particular understanding of how we unpack intersectionality as black women in America and apply this to white women and rape culture, well, you know what? That goes right in line with Molly Ringwald. Because Molly Ringwald is calling on Beyonce, and she's calling on Michelle Obama, and she's calling on black women everywhere to take a knee to protest rape culture. Now, some of you are probably wondering, like, why am I so upset? Let me be clear. They want us to take a knee to protest what's happening with rape culture. Folks, when have we been taking a knee in this country? I mean, has nobody ever heard of my man, you know, Kaepernick? Has nobody ever seen the pictures of Dr. King and all of these other nameless and faceless civil rights activists on one knee? So you're going to tell me that now the one thing that black folks do protesting at this point, the killings of unarmed black and white black folks, you're now telling us we need to take a knee? For rape culture, I am all in support of fighting against rape culture. I'm not in support of co-opting what has come to be known as a part of our essential movement and Black Lives Matter and protesting police brutality and turning it around. So let's talk about that today, because we got to kind of break this down and see what is going on. So here we go. We got a lot going on. There is a question on the table where I asked you. Once I told you, I said the second black man to get his PhD from Harvard University is Dr. Carter G. Woodson, the founder of Negro History Week, which later became Black History Month, the founder of the Association for the Study of African American Life and History, ASALA, where I serve as a national secretary. He was the second. Who was the first? I've got tickets to this event happening on Saturday. It's this big lynching. It was not just a memorial, it's a conversation, it's a breakdown, it's helping us to understand what is going on here in Maryland and what about our history. I'm going to be moderating the panel. I got tickets to give away if you want to come join me. I asked a question for the first person to tell me who was the first black man to get his PhD from Harvard University, from the Department of History. I have Ian on the phone attempting to answer the question. Ian, welcome to Today with Dr. K.
Hey, good afternoon, Dr. I forgot your name now.
Dr. K?
Dr. K, good afternoon.
Dr. K, all day long. Okay, yeah, how you doing?
The answer, I think, was a W.B. DeBoer.
Yes, W.B. DeBoer was actually the first. Thank you very much. I'm going to have you hold on because I want to give you tickets to come and join me on Saturday for the lynching exhibit. Now, we had a couple of folks to answer. So, Ian, you'll get a ticket. And the second person, all right, Ian, put them on hold. They'll get the information. Let me talk to Yvette. Yvette's a new caller from Catonsville. Yvette, how are you?
I'm well.
And they said
Hello,
you had,
Dr. K.
How you doing?
I enjoy your show.
Thank you so much. They told me that you had the answer. You were the second one to call with the correct answer. So, Yvette, why don't we go ahead and let's give you a ticket as well and have you come out and join me on Saturday.
Oh, that'd be great.
This panel is going to be amazing. We are breaking down the history of lynching in Maryland. We are giving voice to every one of the victims. We have their names, Yvette. We're going to light a candle. Okay. We're going to speak their names on Saturday at the Lewis Museum. So why don't you come out and join us?
Great.
All right, Yvette, you hold on because we'll give you a ticket. And then let me speak to Apache. Apache, how are you? I think they're getting Apache on the phone for me, because Apache, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you doing today?
Fine. They told me you were the third person to call with the right answer.
Yes, ma'am. W.E.B.
Absolutely. You know what, Apache? You know, it's that day. I'm just getting back from this conference. I'm all wrapped up in loving black history. Why don't I give you a ticket as well, Apache?
Well, thank you. So
come
much.
On out and be a guest today of Dr. K, because the first guy didn't know my name. Be a guest of Dr. K. And so I will look for you and Yvette and Ian, and let's come together on Saturday with people from all over this country, and let's talk about the history of lynching here in Maryland.
You got it.
Thank you so much, Apache. Hold on. They're going to get your information. So, folks, they gave me four tickets. I got one more to give away. So if you stay with us in the 4 o'clock hour, I'm going to ask a question. It's going to be about black women's history, and I'm going to give up that fourth ticket around lynching. So I want to make a note, though. Before I get Jesse Schneiderman on the phone to talk about the $7 million, today is Indigenous Peoples Day. Happy Indigenous Peoples Day. Now, by now, I am sure that we all understand that Christopher Columbus didn't discover America or anything else, right? He wasn't even the first European to do so. Brother got lost. So we still gave them a holiday. We still had to learn how in 1492 Columbus sailed the ocean blue. But thankfully, that pendulum of truth and justice has swung in the other direction. And we are no longer celebrating the life and the lives of someone who was a murderer. We're not going to do that. So we have turned this day into Indigenous Peoples Day, and it is being celebrated all over the United States. At least a dozen U.S. cities, including San Francisco and Cincinnati, that's what they're doing today, Indigenous Peoples Day. It's happening in states like Minnesota, Alaska, Vermont, and Oregon, replacing Columbus Day with Indigenous Peoples Day. I think it's important for us to understand that the way we write the history is by telling the truth. We no longer accept the lies being taught to us just because the people who teach us have led us to believe that they know what they're talking about. Folks, we're not that hungry. We don't have to eat every crumb falling off the table just because we're hungry. We can show discernment. We can show wisdom. We can push back and say we want the correct history. So we don't celebrate Columbus Day, nor do we throw it out. Instead, we reclaim that, and we celebrate Indigenous Peoples of America, and we commemorate their shared history and culture. The holiday began in 1989 in South Dakota, and it has been going strong since then. So happy Indigenous Peoples Day, and happy birthday to Jesse Jackson Sr. My man's birthday is today as well. So $7 million, just about, give or take a couple of hundred thou here or there, Baltimore City Public Schools spent, I think, $6 million roughly? Jesse Schneiderman, can you give me the exact amount?
Hey, Dr. K.
Hey, how are you?
I am wonderful. How are you?
I'm asking, you have the whole amount here, and I'm doing well. So you take me through it?
I believe it was $6,800,000 and change.
$6,800,000, $72.83. I'm looking at your graph right now because you broke it all the way down. And you pulled this from the 2018 budget statement. So we're spending this type of money on school police. Your question is, what else could we do with it? Can you talk us through what you laid out and why you think that that's not happening? Because you're a teacher here at Frederick Douglass High School. You teach high school. I also know that you're a doctoral candidate. And you've also been here and taken advantage of the Teacher Depot. So we were excited to have you come by.
Yeah, so thank you, first of all, for the Teacher Depot. We were really happy to get all the supplies. And thanks to your listeners for giving us those. So there's a number of things schools can do with that $6,800,000. There's 154 traditional schools in the city. The city will say 171. That's because six of them are non-traditional, or seven of them are non-traditional. There are alternative programs, things like that. With that money, school could hire 120 social workers to be dispersed to the highest need school. Mm. We know social workers are really adept at helping students who experience trauma and experience adverse childhood experiences, which impacts their learning. So social workers was one.
Well, let me stop you there, because what I'm trying to understand, you're talking about social workers. I saw the article in the Baltimore Sun that Baltimore City Schools have seen a steep decline in the number of counselors in recent years, that due to budget woes, that they've actually had a 30% drop in a city where you have children who are routinely traumatized by neighborhood violence. They're traumatized by things like no heat and lack of air, and yet they don't have people to walk them through this.
Correct. There's actually more school police officers in Baltimore City Public Schools than guidance counselors.
Oh, my.
So the another thing that I saw was that let's throw out elementary and middle school, because the district has dropped, as far as I understand it, the district has dropped the requirement for elementary and middle to even have school counselors because of the budget woes. So let's throw out elementary and middle school. All 25 high schools could have three guidance counselors each additional to help kids apply to college, find careers, finish up their stuff, make sure they have all their credits, make sure they have all their service learning hours, and make sure that kids have everything they need to graduate with that money as well. All 25 high schools in the city could have an additional three guidance counselors.
Well, then with that, okay, so if we bring in three, you know, that many guidance counselors, do you think, Jesse, given your experience at Douglas, and I've been in your classroom. I've talked to your students where a number of them have said, I mean, I'm thinking about our Teen Summit, that a number of them said one of the things that they are missing out on is having mentors and having guidance to talk them through what they need to do to be able to move their life to the next level.
Yeah, we have three school counselors for about 870 students.
Wow.
So they end up getting really bogged down in paperwork and making sure the seniors have everything they need to graduate and making sure that the PSATs are registered for and making sure all of the things that are part of a guidance counselor's job end up being all of their job because they don't have the support and the sheer numbers that they need. So if we doubled the amount of school counselors my school had, that would allow some counselors to focus more on making sure kids are ready for careers. Oh, you wanted to go to a career, here's a trade school, here's all the different trade options. They can make sure that students are going on college visits and really making sure they're contacting colleges and bring colleges in to speak to them to make sure that the kids really have the opportunities that we say that we give them.
Well, let me ask you this, if you wouldn't mind telling us, because I know people are very interested. When you think about Frederick Douglass, what is actually, if you happen to know this information, the percentage of students coming out of Douglass, which we know is a challenged environment, we also know it's a historical school here in the city, but what is the percentage of students leaving Douglass, the place where Thurgood Marshall went to high school? You know, I know our Dean Wickham is also very familiar with Douglass, leaving Douglass High School and going on to a four-year college.
I actually don't know those numbers, but I could definitely tell you for sure that if there was enough adults in the building who could offer a little more guidance and who could spend some time really making sure kids had financial aid under control, we do our best with what we have. And we have the College Board. Someone comes in a couple times a week, which is really great and helpful. But if we had people who are specifically dedicated to these tasks, 5 days a week, 8 hours a day, coming in saying, I'm going to make sure all these kids are signed up with FAFSA. I'm going to make sure that all these kids are doing the Common App and the Historically Black College Common App, which is a separate Common App. If we had the ability to make sure our students were applying to all the opportunities and getting all the scholarships they needed and getting all the loans they needed, then the number would be higher because we'd have kids who feel like it's actually an attainable goal. Now there aren't as many adults in the building who are able, just with time constraints and personnel constraints, who are able to sit there with kids and take them through the process and talk about options. I remember when I was in high school, and I grew up in the suburbs of New York City. When I was in high school, my guidance counselor sat me and my mom down, and he had a list of 10 colleges based on my grades and my interests. And we talked the pros and cons of all of them, and when I should go on trips to all of them, and what I need for all of them, and what electives would be good for all of them. And it really allowed me to make sure I got into the school I wanted to go to, which I did. And we just don't have the time to do that with our kids because of our constraints. If we had three more school counselors at my school, we would be able to make sure that every kid had that exact same scenario, had that exact same meeting. And I'm not saying my school counselors at Douglass aren't doing that now because they're killing it with what they have. But to double the amount of personnel is a huge improvement, obviously.
Well, let me ask you this, because I know if you look at the Park scores, Douglass Park scores were not that high in terms of the percentage of young people who actually passed. So
correct.
Do you think having more school counselors, would it help that? Because, I mean, ultimately, when it comes down, you can't get to college if you can't get through the park. Like, there's steps here. So do you think having more guidance counselors will solve what, to me, is where the problem is really resulting in the results in what we're seeing? So instead of having them get to college, how about having them get successfully through high school? Will guidance counselors help that?
So I'm not sure that guidance counselors would be the best method for looking at park and improving park scores. But what I can tell you is that a number of the other options that I brought up in the graphic would be really helpful. And social workers to help with social-emotional learning is really related to student achievement and success. You know, another one of the ones I put up was academic clubs. Every single student in every single Baltimore City high school, in every single Baltimore City school could participate in debate, robotics, art, poetry, any of those programs with this money. And when students participate in extracurricular clubs, specifically those with an academic bend towards them, like those that I named, students are more successful in school and their learning goes up. And there's tons of research looking at this specifically with African-American students.
Okay, so then you got
that. So while guidance may not be a direct move towards park scores, that money could be redistributed if we're deciding we want to really focus on park, which I'm not so sure I want to do because I'm not so sure that park is a great test.
Right.
But if we decide that's our focus, then there's a lot of things we can do with that that isn't specifically related to guidance counselors necessarily, but also isn't going to school police.
Okay, so you also put down nurse practitioners. That was the one that concerned me, because if you need nurse practitioners, what's happening now? So children get sick, they get hurt. Like, who's in the building helping out?
So there is a nurse. There's a school nurse.
Okay.
And the school nurse, you know, has the abilities of a nurse. A school nurse does not have the abilities of a nurse practitioner. Nurse practitioners can prescribe medicine like doctors. They can do a lot of things at the same level as physicians. So having nurse practitioners in school would allow students to get checkups, which a lot of our kids miss out on.
Okay.
Things like that. And pointing to larger problems that kids may need to fix. You know, when more research that I've looked at in my doctoral research is when schools have a school-based health center, kids are more successful in the school. When there is a school-based health center, kids who are pregnant or have asthma or have lead poisoning or have chronic health issues are more successful in the school because rather than going to the doctor, they can schedule an appointment around their lunch or their free period and stay in the building.
Now, I have to ask the question that people are probably going to be thinking about. So if we take this money, this is roughly over $606 million plus, close to $7 million. If we take this money from school police and we put it into, like you said, nurse practitioners, academic extracurricular programs, guidance counselors, you know, social workers. If we do that, Jesse,
yes.
Then what about the school police? Are you saying do away with that?
Absolutely not, Dr. Tay. Okay. I've actually come around on this issue. I think I've been on your show talking against school police in the past, and I've actually come around on this issue a little bit. I think school police are important, and I think that school police, having police in schools, especially in some of our areas that are a little more high crime that need to communicate with the BPD, is fine. The BPD has double the budget of Baltimore City Schools. The BPD can do $7 million. The BPD has seven of the top 10 earning employees in Baltimore City because they make 150% of their salary in overtime.
Right.
So the BPD can handle $7 million. You know who can't handle $7 million? Is the organization that has half the budget.
Ugh. Jesse, I appreciate you. Thank you so much for coming on the show, folks. Jesse Schneiderman is a teacher here in Baltimore City. He's just challenging this notion that if Baltimore City is spending almost $7 million, $6,872,083 to be exact, on Baltimore School Police, look at what we're not spending it on. Nurse practitioners, academic extracurricular programs, guidance counselors, social workers. Let's talk about that when we come back, because it looks like it's going to have to be an either or situation. I can't see how it's going to be and both. This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Stay with us. Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. We're talking just about a simple graphic that a teacher put up. He took a look at the Baltimore City School operating budget, and he noticed that Baltimore City allocates and spent last year in the 2018 budget, they're allocating $6,872,083. That is what they're allocating to spend on Baltimore City School Police. He's asking the question, what else could we spend the money on? If we're spending all this money on Baltimore City School Police, which he's saying has doubled the operating budget of the schools itself, well, are we going in the wrong direction? We figured the best person to ask was Kim Trueheart. She's an activist. She understands what's happening in the school. You know her work here. Kim, thank you so much for joining us.
Good afternoon, Dr. K. Thanks for asking me to comment on this.
Yes, because, I mean, we got to get some answers. And in our opinion, you are one of the people that can help us put some flesh behind this story. Is it just that simple? Take the almost $7 million, just reallocate it to all the things our students need? Or is there more at work here that we have to really investigate?
There's a lot more work that needs to be done. We know for a fact that Baltimore City Schools have been underfunded for decades. And to do a shell game of taking money from the safety program,
right,
which is necessary, to put it into the classroom support that our kids need, it can only benefit for a moment the outcomes for our children. It feels good to say that the police don't deserve that kind of funding, but I think our school police are very different from the Baltimore City Police.
Okay.
They do coaching. They do mentoring. Our children see them in the classroom, in the building, and they develop relationships with them. I think they are counselors in a lot of ways.
Okay.
And I think we need to focus on the fact that somebody in uniform isn't always a bad thing. And the challenge here is we need more money for
right.
our schools. And I don't believe that it is an either-or proposition here. I think we want safety. We also want the safety that comes from these trained officers who
right.
are coaches, who are counselors, who the children can relate with. We don't want the Betsy DeVos security in our buildings, you know, where she was authorizing them to use school funds to buy guns for
right,
people.
Right. And we had a conversation about that on this show, that we don't
exactly.
think that's the direction we need to move in either.
Exactly. Yeah, but safety is important.
Right.
And I don't know that $7 million is the right number.
Okay.
But every one of our high schools has a school safety officer in that school.
Well, see, I think what you just said is something that that has to be illuminated. The idea that the city officers, school officers, which are different from the Baltimore City police officers, and people have to understand that we've had Clyde Boatwright, he was just on the show on Friday, but that you said they actually act as counselors, that they're actually counseling the students, they're mentoring the students, they're coaching the students, that they're serving multiple roles and multiple purposes in the school.
Yes, they are. And they're doing a very good job under their current chief of police.
Well, that's good to know. So then how do we get to a better place? Because what it feels like, Kim, and I'm just talking about what Jesse Schneiderman, what this teacher wrote, it feels like we can't do both. It doesn't feel like an and both. I mean, the simple solution would be and both, but we know that that's not what's happening. It's like we get one thing, but it seems like we're giving up so much more.
Yeah, I love that you asked me what can we do. You know, there is a ballot initiative on the November 6th ballot for all of the state of Maryland to decide whether the casino funds ought to be dedicated for schools, right?
Right.
That's called the lockbox initiative.
Okay, let me write that down because we were actually going to, that was going to be my next question, to talk to you about these casino funds because Maryland marked its fourth best month for casino revenue in September, where the state's six casinos earned a total revenue of $143.8 million in one month, just last month alone.
Exactly. And right now, we have no assurance that that money is coming to schools,
wow.
right? So the lockbox initiative that's on the ballot,
mm-hmm.
everybody needs to vote for.
Lockbox initiative. Vote yes. Okay.
Vote yes. That means that the money from the casinos absolutely can't be diverted to other places.
Mm-hmm.
It has to go to the school.
I like that. I mean, have you noticed, Kim, whenever we have a conversation about schools on this show, somebody invariably asks, well, I thought we were getting the casino money. Where's that money? Like,
yeah.
we hear that all the time.
Yes, yes. It's not guaranteed. You know, if the governor wants to use it for something else today, he can do that.
Okay.
But November the 7th, the day after the election, we're not going to stand for that because we're voting yes to have a lockbox set up for all the casino.
I like that.
He can't touch any of it.
Now, I want to bring some calls in. People are calling off the hook here because you know they want to get on the conversation, Kim. So please, if you don't mind, I'm going to open up the line so we can kind of feel some of these calls here. We have Rob on the phone from Forest Park. Rob, how are you? And welcome to the show.
Well, good afternoon and welcome back to you.
Thank you.
Hey, look, I just told Miss Justina, Miss Deja and that crew, they did the job that you all expect from them. So I'm going to leave that alone. I did what I wanted to do, and I told her I was going to let you all know.
Good.
Now, I had the opportunity to work as a guidance counselor at Booker T. and Douglas.
Oh, thank you for your service, too.
And Doc, it was an eye-opening experience. Mm. And the only reason why I got the job because of juvenile services for the state of Maryland. And it was very rewarding. And three people can't do the job. You need more than three.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to leave my conversation at that. And
okay.
Welcome back.
Thank you so
and
much.
Have a good day today.
I appreciate you, sir. So let me ask you this, Kim, because one of the things that Jesse Schneiderman said in this article, that if we get more guidance counselors, because currently there are only 80 guidance counselors for 80,000 Baltimore City students. First of all, that's ridiculous, right?
That's outrageous.
I mean, that's outrageous. 80 guidance counselors only. So we know there's a problem there. But do you think if we can get more guidance counselors in school, would that change things like park scores? Would we begin to see kind of a certain level of self-esteem begin to rise up in our children? Would we see more of them on the path towards college and not towards perhaps other things?
Yeah, but we also need new air conditioners, heating systems. So where does that fit on the list of needs for Baltimore City Public Schools? I agree. Jesse Schneiderman and I are in lockstep with the need for more counselors. Absolutely. But you know, where does the money come from? We don't have it in the current budget.
We need that lockbox initiative, folks, on November 6th. Vote yes. We have Gene on the phone from Pikesville. Gene, welcome to the show.
And hello, Dr.
Hello.
K.
How are you?
I got a question, Ms. Trueheart. So you said the lockbox issue is not a Larry Hogan initiative?
It is. There were two different versions of the lockbox.
Okay,
one
there you go.
One was put in by Delegate Mary Washington, I believe, and it made the implementation immediate. I think Hogan slows the implementation down, but ultimately we get to it. I'm not thrilled that it is his initiative.
Uh-huh.
He's been running commercials on TV to garner support, but it achieves the same objective. His just takes a little longer.
Oh, okay. And so I was kind of confused with that because I asked specifically the question, should we, as I just, ordered my absentee ballot, and so that issue, I said, should we say yes to that, a referendum.
Yes.
So we should say yes. Okay.
So
I have another question. So
please go ahead, Gene.
My cousin, 5 years older than me, he's graduated from Morgan, was a phys ed major. And as we know, when you take health, that's under the phys ed department.
Right.
I think that's how it was when I was going to school. Is health still there?
Yes. No, you're absolutely correct.
Okay,
you still do that. Mm-hmm.
And as a phys ed major, you're a coach.
Right.
And so counselors are coaches somewhat. So to me, it's like if certain disciplines took 3 or 4 or 5 credits in the psychology area, that including the city policeman, school policeman, that they were qualified to be counselors.
Oh, you mean having them playing multiple roles?
Yeah, getting a certificate or being certified,
right,
or taking classes under their discipline to qualify them for that. In other words, just, to be a school policeman, I'm sure there are certain requirements.
Right.
But they could have additional requirements with have them cross-trained to counsel, kids. That isn't that what you're implying in a sense, Ms. Trueheart?
Not really, because I believe teachers have enough on their plate today.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, I'm saying the policemen.
Oh, the police, yes, the police.
Because you say they're actually doing that dual role now.
Yes, right. They are.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the other thing, too, is I think one of the most underutilized areas, which came out of Brown versus the Board of Education subsequently, is the charter system, the charter school system. I'm sorry, Miss Varis Lee, over right around the corner from Morgan, and I'm apologizing to her because I can't remember the NACA school. the Apple School.
Oh, but to look to use the charter schools kind of as an alternative environment.
Yeah, and I'll just give myself as a case an example. When I graduated, I loved sports when I was in school, and I was in my last, I was in the commercial class, and there were nine of them, and I was in the last of them. And so when I graduated from high school, I did go to college, but I went as a special student. So I took 9 credits, and then I took the remedial classes, and I matriculated in 5 years.
Well, now, I'm going to stop you there, Gene. I'm so sorry. We have a number of callers. Kim, I just want to ask you, as Gene hangs up, is that the answer? Is using charter schools is what Gene is offering. Is that a possible way that we can get to some solutions?
I think if we use them the way the law says, as beds of experiment,
right,
that we can take best practices of things that work,
right,
and bring them to the neighborhood traditional schools. We're not doing that very well at all. And I, in fact, had a discussion Saturday with the principal at City Neighbors High School, a charter. And she was saying the same thing. Her disappointment is that there is not more interaction between neighborhood schools and charters.
Okay.
So they can share some of those lessons learned.
Now, Dushan King wanted to know on Facebook Live, he said, what will the lockbox money budget look like? It's whatever the casinos have allocated for education?
Yes.
Okay.
We have the education trust fund, but it has been raided.
Okay, so the Education Trust Fund. Okay, we have Andre on the phone. Andre is a new caller calling in from Reisterstown, Maryland. Andre, welcome to the family. How are you?
Hey, Doc. How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing well. Thank you for calling.
Yes, ma'am.
So did you have a question for Ms. Trueheart?
Well, I just wanted to...
Yes, Andre?
Okay. I just wanted to recommend what could be done with that $6-some-odd million.
Yes.
Yes.
So what can be done? What do you think? All right, so we'll have to hang up on Andre. Andre, can you give us a call back? Because I think you got to turn your radio down because you're hearing it on a delay.
Oh, okay.
Yes, okay. So if you hold on 1 second, Andre, they're going to help you fix that. Hold on 1 second. Okay. We'll go on to Monica. She's a Baltimore City school counselor. Monica, how are you?
Hello?
Monica, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for calling, and you're on with myself and Kim Trueheart.
Yeah, I don't really have a question for Ms. Trueheart. I know she's just been a champion for anything that's positive for our school for many years. I just wanted to give some comments because I am a guidance counselor, a school counselor, working for Baltimore City, so I'm one of the 80.
Wow.
Working with the 80,000.
That is unbelievable to me. Like, it's unbelievable.
And one of the reasons that we are in this dilemma is based on the budgeting. Ms. Trueheart is so correct. It's always about the money. And years ago, the school counseling position was a rock position for schools, and it no longer, under the new budget constraints where schools can have their own budgets, that was an item that's not required. So because it's not a required item, principals decide what to do with that money or how to do their budget. It's not a locked-in position. The other thing that Baltimore City does is Baltimore City contracts out to private companies such as College Bell to do the same exact job that the school counselors are required to do.
Oh, okay.
School counselors are certified by the state of Maryland, and a lot of times when people hear the word guidance counseling, that's why we moved away from that term. But we are certified school counselors. We are mental health professionals with specific training. And so everybody can't do our job, which is a misnomer.
Right.
We do more than credit checks. We do more than making sure kids get into college. We're certified in counseling for grief, suicide, personal and social behaviors. We support the school in many different ways. We support families. And we're the first line of defense as a student advocate.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, let me ask you this, Monica. First of all, thank you for calling and thank you for your service to the city and to the children of Baltimore City. Now, Ms. Trueheart had talked about how the Baltimore City School Police are acting as counselors in the school, counselors and mentors and so on. So where do you think we should go? Because if we're spending roughly $7 million to make sure we have all these Baltimore City police officers, And what we don't have is guidance counselors. Are there things that we can train the school police to do that would help with the fact that we see this big gap between 80 guidance counselors and 80,000 students?
Yeah, I think it's inherent in the school police, in the school police's job. I think it's inherent that they have counseling experience because they work with young people. A lot of times people view them as like the police on the street.
Right.
But they're trained and certified police officers that work with young people. So they learn how to de-escalate. And a lot of times we work with school police when they find out something is going on, that maybe why there was some negative behaviors, they refer and bring those students to the school counselor.
Okay. So you do see them acting as counselors or mentors or just support system for our students?
Most definitely.
Okay.
I am pro school police, and they are mentors and counselors. They are everything, and they are extremely important to our schools, and they should be able to carry guns.
All right, thank you so much, Monica. I'm gonna come back. Miss Kim, I gotta come back to the guns comment and get through these questions about this $7 million. We got Andre. They fixed Andre's phone. How are you, Andre?
Doing this afternoon.
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for holding on. All right, go ahead. You have Miss Trueheart and myself on.
Yeah, hi, ladies. I think that money would be well spent if you would hire more of the guidance counselors,
right?
Other resources such as tutors to get these students into Baltimore City up to par and to help them to graduate and improve those types of learning outcomes. But that the problem with it really.
All right. Thank you so much, Andre. We have James on the phone. James is a new caller from Baltimore. James, welcome to the show. You're on with Kim Trueheart and myself.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well. Thank you for calling.
No problem. I just wanted to comment on the allocation of funds in general. I was just having a conversation with one of my colleagues about the amount of money that comes in general. It's about $14,000 per student.
Mm-hmm.
And other jurisdictions might get about $3,000, and they're able to give a better education. So in general, just talking about $7 million, if, in my opinion, I would allocate, if we were to abolish the school police, and do a partnership with Baltimore City Police and let those funds come from the Baltimore City Police Department and let that be a subsidiary there, just to release those funds for our district to utilize them in a more efficient manner. I would push that not into guidance programs, but programs that actually engage the child, like STEM programs, you know.
Right.
They used to be home ec and things
right.
like that.
Right.
Understanding of how to actually manage your checkbook, just how to actually develop the child so they can grow into a functioning adult.
Thank you.
I understand the trauma piece is there, but if we're able to actually help them along with the 80 guidance counselors, we won't have to put so much heavy lifting onto guidance in general. If we're able to engage them and put them in programs that they're interested in, I feel like there would be a better outlook. So allocating $7 million into career technology and education and pieces like that, I feel like that would be a strongly beneficial effect.
All right. Thank you so much, James. So Kim, I'm going to have you kind of take James's his points in two pieces. One is this idea that when people think about how much Baltimore City spends, he said $14,000. He actually said versus $3,000, I think, which I'm not sure if a school district gets that, you know, small amount. But people look at the $14,000 and wondering why we don't have more for our students. Can you talk about how it doesn't quite work that we get a $14,000 check for student A and we can just go get what they need? And then that second piece he was saying about trying to get rid of the school police and have Baltimore City Police do that job. And I think that's a big point. I'd like you to unpack both of those things, please.
So let's start with the last one. The Baltimore City Police Department is the most dysfunctional agency in the state.
Mm.
It does not work. And for them to now have a direct line to our children would be a huge mistake from my perspective. I think having a separate police department authorized for our schools gives us better control over them, gives us the ability to train them on things that we think are important, like trauma and how it impacts a child. They're learning those things. They participated in various studies around how to best interact with our children. So I'm not so sure that makes sense.
Okay.
Until the city police have to get itself together.
Right, and I'm not sure if that's the best answer, to bring the police, who are, I believe, used to policing us in some ways that are quite questionable, now sending them into our school systems with our students, with our young children.
No, yeah. So, and then his other question. City schools receive about $16,000 per child from the various funders, federal, state, and local. That money then has to be distributed again to take care of central functions at North Avenue, and then there's an allocation made to the school. And we have two funding formulas for that. The bottom line is the average neighborhood school right now is getting about 7,000 of that.
Wow.
16,000 per child.
Oh,
and the counselor, Monica, I thank her for calling in. One of the points that she made was around the school budget. Principals at one point had to hire counselors. It was mandatory. Now it's no longer mandatory. So it is up to that school to decide how to best use that $7,000 per child that they get. So they will hire, in our instance at elementary school, you know, pre-K, kindergarten through fifth grade teachers. They also hire a psychologist.
Right.
We have a school counselor.
So a full support team there for the students.
Right. And we have a full-time community school coordinator, which comes to us from the community schools allocation that comes to us. So we have a lot of support in the building for children.
Right.
We also have written grants. So we not only have the one psychologist funded by the school budget, we have one funded by a grant. So we have two psychologists on staff.
Now, I want to put some comments out here because Melissa Sherber chimed in from Facebook Live. She said, no disrespect to Ms. Trueheart, but police are not counselors. They are not licensed by a state board of practice. They are not required to get CEUs. There's no expectation of confidentiality. School police cannot bill Medicaid. Social workers can. School counselors in Maryland require a master's degree from an approved CACREP school program, and they are nationally board certified counselors and need a certificate.
I love Melissa, and you know, I'm not saying that police are a substitute for counselors. By no means am I saying.
Okay.
I'm saying that they help to augment the fact that we only have 80.
Right, 80 for 80,000.
Right. And right now, I don't think doing away with them is in our best interest. I think having them there is a next best thing right now,
right,
considering the budget. They often refer children. Yeah, you should look at their number of referrals to specialized services and programs. They do that when others aren't doing that, helping our children connect,
right,
to the resources they need.
All right, I'm going to try to get one more call in here. I'm looking. We have Kim on from Randallstown. Kim, how are you? You got a quick question for Ms. Trueheart?
Well, I just wanted to make a comment.
Yes, ma'am.
The whole restructuring of the funding for Baltimore City Schools needs to be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
Every school doesn't need the same thing. And in regard to the policemen, yes, they probably serve a tremendous role, and yes, they should have them. But in the same token, we need counselors, psychologists, and with our children, these children from the inner city come into schools with immense trauma,
right,
from family life, and we cannot just bullet rush that. We can put all the air conditioning, fix all the pipes.
Right.
If you don't fix the child, you really haven't done anything. And so that's my point.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Restructure how the spending is allocated for the school and the district that they're in and the needs of that community.
All right. Thank you so much, Kim. We have Mr. B on the phone. He's a new caller from Baltimore. Mr. B, how are you?
Good afternoon, ma'am. How you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I just want to make a small comment. First, I think you have a really great show, and it's nice to hear the commentary from, everyone involved and that's interested. But I'm actually a Baltimore City police officer, and we actually support the school police in a great many ways. I don't think we should go in to take over the schools, but it's not as bad as you think, because we also handle incidents that the Baltimore school police cannot handle. But I just wanted to put that out there.
I'm glad you can. Can you just explain that, Mr. B? So just so I can understand, because Kim Trueheart is an activist and educator in the school. I'm not. I'm on the outside. So when I think about something happening in the school, and I've talked to Clyde Boatwright, who I believe is in charge of the Baltimore City School Police, and he talks about the ways that the school police look to work with families, I see that a little bit differently than the police. Now, my producer is waving me for a heartbreak. Mr. B, can you hold on over the commercial break? Because I do want to get this question answered, if you don't mind.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and Kim, can you hold on a little bit longer as well?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to hold them both. Folks, when we come back, I want to kind of explore this a little bit, because Mr. B is saying, you know, the cops do some supporting. I want to talk about what that's going to look like. This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. There's a quick update from MTA, and we're going to pick this conversation up on the other side of the break.